Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 42, The Breaking of the Bow. We're going to do texts 32 through 38, so together we can do 32 through 37, and responsively we'll do 38. 32. Vyustayam nishikauraivya surye chadya samuhite karayamasavai kamso mala krido mahotsavam. Translation. When the night had finally passed and the sun rose up again from the water, Kamsa set about arranging for the grand wrestling festival. 33. Anarchu purusha rangam turya buryas jajad nire manchas chalang krita shradbi pataka chailatoranai. Translation. The king's men perform the ritual worship of the wrestling arena, sounded their drums and other instruments, and decorated the viewing galleries with garlands, flags, ribbons, and arches. 34. Deshu paura janapada brahma shatra purogama yato pajo shavivishu Rajanascha Kritasana. Translation. The city dwellers and residents of the outlying districts, led by Brahmanas and Kshatriyas, came and sat down comfortably in the galleries. The royal guests received special seats. 35. Kamsa Parivrito Machai Raja Mancha Upavishat Mandalae Swarama Jamsto Ridayena Viduyata. Translation. Surrounded by his ministers, Kamsa took his seat on the imperial dais. But even as he sat amidst the various provincial rulers, his heart trembled. 36. Vajamana Shutur Yeshu Malatola Tareshu Cha Mala suvalankrita dripta sopajaya samasata. Translation. While the musical instruments loudly played in the rhythmic meters appropriate for wrestling matches, the lavishly ornamented wrestlers proudly entered the arena with their coaches and sat down. 37. Chanuro mushtika kuta salashto shalayevacha Tase durupastanam valgu vaja pravarshitaha. Translation. Thus, by the pleasing music, Chanura, Mushtika, Kuta, Shala, and Toshala sat down on the wrestling mat. And 38 will do responsibly. Nanda gopadayo gopa. Boja Raja Samahutaha Nivedito Payana Astoa Nivedito Payana Astoa Ekasmin Mancha Avishan Nanda Gopadayo Gopa Boja Raja Samahutaha Nevidito payanasta Ekasmin mancha avishan Nanda gopadayo gopa Rajo boja raja samahuta Nivedito payanasta Ekasmin mancha avisham. Please chant. Nanda Gopada Yogopa Boja Raja Samahuta Vivedito Payanasta Ekasmin Mancha Avisham Nanda Gopada Yogopa Boja Raja Samahuta Mothers. Nanda Gopada Yogopa Boja Raja Samadhyaya. So word for word. Nanda Gopa Adaya. Headed by Nanda Gopa. Gopaha, the cowherds. Boja Raja, by Kamsa, king of the Bojas. Samahutaha, called forward. Nivedita, presenting. Upayanaha, their offerings. Te, they. Ekasmin, in one. Manche, viewing gallery. Avishan, sat down. Translation and purport by the Disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Translation. Nanda Maharaj and the other cowherds, summoned by the king of the Bojas, presented him with their offerings and then took their seats in one of the galleries. Purport. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti, the word Samahutaha indicates that King Kamsa respectfully called the leaders of Raja forward so that they could make their offerings to the central government. According to the Acharya, Kamsa assured Nanda as follows, quote, "My dear king of Raja, you are the most important of my village rulers. Yet even though you have come to Mathura from your cowherd village, you have not come to visit me. Is that because you are frightened? Don't think that your two sons are bad because they broke the bow. I invited them here because I heard they were extremely powerful, and I've arranged this wrestling match as a test of their strength. So please come forward without hesitation. Don't be afraid." Unquote. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti further states that Nanda Maharaj noticed his two sons were not present. Apparently, out of disrespect for King Kamsa's order, they had taken the morning off and gone elsewhere. Hare Krishna, these are boys. Thus, Kamsa delegated some cowherd men to go look for them and advise them to behave properly and come back to the wrestling arena. The Acharya also states that the reason Nanda and the other cowherd men sat in the galleries was that they could not find any sitting places on the royal dais. Thus end the purports of the humble servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, to the 10th canto, 42nd chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Breaking of the Sacrificial Bow. Om Gyan Timurandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Manitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guru Vinamaya Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shimati Shila Prabhu Prabhu Iti Namani Shri Shivrindata Vivira Padapaj Pankaja Daini Prabhupada Anubadaya Namasha Yishvira Bhavai Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Shmati Bhakti Vedanta Samiti Namini Namaste Sarasati Devi Gauravani Pacharani Nivishesha Sunivari Pasati Deshitarani. Hare Krishna. So, this pastime continue with Krishna and Balaram touring this city of Mathura, and they are performing their activities, and they just, as we learned the other day, after breaking the bow, killing so many of Kamsa's men, they just went home and slept comfortably. They don't think of any, you know, anything is really big or wrong with that. Of course, it was an indication to tell Kamsa, you know, as a preview of what was coming the day to follow. So, kids are like that. They perform their activities and they just take things on a whole different level. You know, they're fine with it. Okay, we kill a few men, I don't know, a few hundred, whatever it is. It's no big deal. We're killing demons every day. That's no big deal. Actually, last year, this time, after the Rath Yatra, we were up like from 3 o'clock in the morning, so I came back home at about 11 at night. We came with one vehicle, so the boys, they had the other truck. So as usual, I would kind of be half awake until I make sure I left my room door open. I can see out in the yard, make sure that they're home safely. I would be worried until they get home. So I went to bed at about 11:30. At 1 o'clock, I got a call. And I looked at the phone. I saw who was calling. So the first thing I said, "What happened? Is everything okay?" It was one of the boys they called. "Oh, yes, everything is okay. It's just that we drove the truck inappropriately and blew up the engine. It's no big deal." So I said, "What?" You know, and for them, you know, "Oh, it's no big deal. We just blew up the engine. That's okay." You know, that's all that happened. So I said, "Well, is everybody okay?" I said, "Yes, you know, are the other boys okay?" "Yes, they're fine. They're just crashing in somebody's paved driveway. They're lying there sleeping." So I said, you know, "And okay, stay right there. We'll get you, you know, we'll get a rescue team for you to go there." So he said, anyway, so I asked him, "Well, how far away are you?" He said, "Not far. We're just about 2 hours away." So they gave me directions where they're at. He said, "Well, when you come, just search around in this area. You'll see the truck on the road, and we'll be sleeping in the yard and on their parking lot. So don't worry about us." So I'm thinking, well, wow, this hour of the night, you know, wonder how we can get them. So I decided, well, I'm going to call my son. So I know he was very tired. Also came in at 11. I said, "Boy, this is going to be hard to wake him up, you know. Kids, they're going to crash." So I call it. First round, he answered the phone. He was up. I said, "Wait, you're still up? 1 o'clock in the morning?" He said, "Yes, I came. I wasn't tired, so I was working on a project I had at home." So I told him what the problem is. He said, "Oh, this is going to be fun to go, you know, so go at this hour in the morning to rescue, you know, my fellow youth." So I thought he would be grouchy or tired or whatever. So he picked up his pregnant wife and they went. So anyway, the idea is that, you know, like kids, they just take things on a whole different level. So Krishna and Balaram, they're only about 11 years old. How they walk around, they kill some people, and, you know, they broke the bow and they just went home and slept comfortably. In the meanwhile, Nana Maharaj was so worried, well, what is the king going to do? You know, the king was so angry and he's going to create such a disaster for all of us going to die. And but the boys, they could care less. They went home. They took their milk and other prasadam, some servants massaged their feet, and they went and they slept as sound as ever. So this is like, you know, a tendency of kids. So after that, the next day, it's time for the wrestling match. So King Kamsa arranged everyone to arrange all the nice preparation festivities for in the city. The arena made all these different fancy arrangements. With all his heart was trembling, because he was sensing that death was coming. So he made all his arrangements, and then the wrestlers, the servants, they were worshiping the wrestling arena. That's what it described here. So this is one aspect of Vedic culture, one beauty of Vedic culture, that every aspect, literally, of one's life is a worship. Of course, the downside is that because of all these worships, sometimes we misunderstand the right person or the right thing to worship. So, but it's easy for people in Vedic culture to become devotees because with a little bit of intelligence to direct them, the right person to worship, then is very easy. So the whole culture of Vedic culture is one of engaging in worshiping every activities that one performed. I knew for me it was kind of easy because that's the way I was brought up since I was like, I remember when I was maybe 3.5, 4 years old. My parents would teach me different prayers that when we flick the light switch on, we say a prayer. To light the fire, they would say a prayer. Go to bed, we say a prayer. Wake up, we say a prayer before taking our meals. Everything was just prayers all the time. That's the way we were brought up. So Vedic culture is like that. And they respect everything. Even I do remember when sometimes my mom would have me like sweep the house and then I would just take the broom and just throw it in the corner. She said, no, you don't do that. That the broom is a representative of your mother because she cleans the house for you. So the broom has to be respected. So, you know, I was thinking, what's this? How can I, you know? But anyway, I was just a little boy. So, but, you know, that culture was there, is that our entire lives are based around worship, service, reverence, and respect for others. I remember one time after one Rathiyatra some years ago in Jacksonville. After that, in the night, I was all soaking wet. I had on a thin kurta. And everyone left getting pretty late, so I took up the broom and was sweeping the road because there was like trash from the Rathiyatra festival on the road. So while sweeping, there were some Indian folks who were still there. And they came and they said, oh no, you can't do that. You're Brahmin, because they saw the string through my wet shirt. They said, no, you can't sweep the road. That's not for you. Let us do it. And they took the broom from my hand and they started sweeping. So I was thinking, you know, this is one, you know, it's like one respect in Vedic culture that they understand. So similar here in the wrestling arena. You have, they're worshiping this wrestling arena. That's what is described in this verse. They're performing this worship. There is everything, it's about respect and reverence. The whole Vedic society is designed like that. The entire culture is about respect, reverence, worship. Yeah, the kids would worship their parents, they would respect their elders, their friends, those who are lower than them. Even the animals, the cows, are very worshipable. And everything that surrounds one's life, it's very, very respected. So this is one advantage in Vedic culture. So now they were worshiping the wrestling arena, then the wrestlers came out. And in the meanwhile, Kamsa had invited Nanda Maharaj and his villagers to come and make their offerings to the central government. So it's a system that you pay taxes to the government, you make your offerings to the government. As what it is even nowadays. So there's one thing here, two things that are quite instructive. At least when I first read this, the first thing that came to my mind when I heard about Kamsa, how he's getting all these symptoms, the first thing that came to my mind is my envy for Kamsa's position. That how fortunate Kamsa is that he's seeing all these symptoms of his death coming. So this is very, very instructive. That Kamsa is fortunate enough, as we read in the past few verses, yesterday or the day before, all these different symptoms that Kamsa was seeing. He would look in the mirror, he wouldn't see his head, he would see holes in his shadow, he couldn't see his footprints in the dirt or sand. All bad omens were there. In Vedic culture, all these are different symptoms of when one's life is coming to an end. And he's fortunate enough to be seeing all these symptoms, having all these symptoms. Just like in the Mahabharata with Maharaj Yudhisthira. After the war, Arjuna went to visit his friend Krishna back in Dwarka. He stayed for 7 months. He wasn't returning. In the meanwhile, Maharaj Yudhishthira was seeing all bad omens. The jackal would cross from his left side. His left side of his body was twitching. He's seeing dark clouds in the sky. There are so many omens. And then when Arjuna came back, he revealed the news that Krishna had left this planet. And now for the Pandavas, everything was just dark, because for them, Krishna was like the only light. So at that point, they knew that it was time for them to prepare to leave this world also. So some people are very fortunate. So in here, Kamsa was very, very fortunate that he was having all these symptoms. When the bow was broken, as we read here today, the song was so cracking and loud that it actually shattered Kamsa's heart. So loud it was. And it actually drove a message to Kamsa, well, your time is coming, your breaths are numbered, your minutes are numbered, not days or hours. So that's a very, very fortunate position. And I personally like felt that kind of a envy per se, because sometimes I feel like I'm not in that position. Even though Srila Prabhupada gave us the Vedic literatures to actually give us this opportunity to read of these personalities, to understand the symptoms of life, understand how our bodies are functioning. We're getting older, we don't have the energy, there are so many things are kind of are going to indicate to us, well, okay, death is coming, our life is going to an end. Make a change to your activities. Do something better, do something more interesting. So the whole Vedic scriptures are there. Srila Prabhupada gave us the cream of the Vedic scriptures, mainly Srimad Bhagavatam, to understand all these activities. And here we may say, well, you know, Kamsa is a demon. What is he doing in this book? Well, he's probably here for a reason. And here is one of the reasons. Give us instruction that here, you know, life is going on, death is coming, prepare yourself, do something about it. So anyway, Kamsa was getting all these symptoms, but he was still trying in his being a manager, and this is quite instructive to our society management, like this part of this, at least this last verse here, of Kamsa using his managerial skills and diplomacy, and he was calling Nanda Maharaj, and he was trying to pacify him that, hey, don't think that your sons were bad, that, you know, that they broke the bow, they killed so many of my men. That's okay, come forward, be comfortable. Because Kamsa had his underlying intention, okay, I want to be patient, I'm going to bring them here today, and I'm going to kill them in grand style in front of everyone's view. So he could have said, well, okay, they have created so many destruction yesterday, come right now and try to kill them. But it's one thing in leadership that patience must be there. And of course diplomacy, but diplomacy for the right purpose, not like for Kamsa. You know, like how he's using his diplomacy. So, but it's quite instructive for us that in management, in whatever field of management we are in, and probably some of us are, that we have to be very patient, very, very patient, and be very calm and cool. So Kamsa was very calm throughout his activities. With all, he was trembling, he was seeing all these symptoms. And he actually knew who would be the one to kill him. He knew that from birth. From the, of course, by the instigation of Sri Narada. Narada was like behaving like a rascal in this whole pastime of instigating Krishna's activities. So while that's going on, Kamsa was very calm. He was inviting Nanda Maharaj, please come forward, make your offering, don't worry about all that the boys did. And of course, Nanda Maharaj was very worried, because he knew who Kamsa was, and he knew what his intentions would actually be. With all, Akrura did not reveal that to Nanda Maharaj. He only revealed it to Krishna and Balaram. Well, Kamsa is really calling you to Mathura to kill you. But he didn't reveal that to Nanda Maharaj, because he knew how worried they would be. So upon doing that, in making all these arrangements, Kamsa noticed that Krishna and Balaram was not around. They were not in the arena. So this is another thing of the way kids take things. Sometimes they don't take things that seriously, or they take things on a whole different level. This whole big wrestling arena, they're supposed to be there, but they just went wandering off somewhere else. So, and you know, they don't care for Kamsa's order. Kamsa ordered them to be there. They don't care about that, you know, they just went on with their own activities. And they don't care, you know, who is Kamsa, what his position is. He's the big king. He would try to harass them. Oh, you know, we can care less about that. I remember some years, actually back in the 90s, one of my services in the Miami temple was to do all the boga collection and prasadam distribution. So I was linked with the food bank, and we used to get so many items. And with frozen items, like refrigerated items, milk and butter, we had so much that the temple couldn't have afford to pay the cold storage, the rent for the cold storage to keep it. So we invited the Alacho temple to go down and take it, pay the rent, and take all these items. So who turned up from Alacho? Ritadvija Maharaj. He came with four or five young boys. So he turned up, and I saw these boys were jumping on his shoulders and playing, and I was telling them, this is a Maharaj, you know, you have to be respectful. He said, Maharaj, you know, he's our friend. That's what the boys are telling me. He's our friend, you know, so they're jumping and playing with him as though, you know, they're just... Yeah, so kids kind of take things sometimes on that different level. So Krishna and Balaram are doing the same thing here. They didn't care much for Kamsa's war. They went wandering along and doing their own thing. Whilst Nanda Baba was very worried about their activities, where they are, what other mischief they might go there to create, and what would be Kamsa's reaction, what is he about to do. So it is actually a very troublesome situation for the parents. But as far as Krishna and Balaram were concerned, oh, it's just another day of our activities. So they carry on like that because they're playing the role of young boys. Then they acted like young boys. They just run around, playing around. They just carry on. No big deal. So Kamsa was very worried. You know, he was trembling with fear. So many symptoms were coming. So much of the people, they were anxious. All the Vrindavan people who were there, they were so very worried about the outcome of this wrestling match. What's going to happen with Krishna and Balaram? All these big wrestlers are there. What's going to happen? So it's a nature for leaders to be worried about the subjects. Sometimes it's not always the nature of the subject to be worried about the leaders or worried about the situation. Like even our temple here, the management, if you talk to the management here, they're always worrying about something, always worry about how the temple is going to go on, how the feast is going to get sponsored. They're always worrying about it. And sometimes the others who come, okay, we just come, we enjoy the program. You know, it's just a nature of leaders and subjects. So the parents are very worried. Krishna and Balaram, oh, we can care less. You know, we're just enjoying life in Mathura here. No big deal. So we're just having some fun. We're here with our friends. We're just roaming around, enjoying the activities. On a side note, we're gonna kill one, two people. We're gonna kill some demons, kill Kamsa. That's like a side note for them. You know. So this is life for Krishna and Balaram. You know, it's life for them. It's this what they're here to give pleasure to the devotees and give some trouble to the demons. You know, so that they're here for protection of the devotees and annihilation of the demons. It's not an annihilation of the demons and protection of the devotees. It's the other way around. So they are here to give pleasure. And with all these pastimes, they're giving pleasure to so many people. And they're enjoying it. Similarly, the devotees are enjoying it. Like devotional service is described that it's joyfully performed. So this is our process, joyful performance of devotional service, and we enjoy it very much. Not that we enjoy it separately, but we enjoy as part and parcel of Krishna and his service. We enjoy it together. We try to do it independently. We chop our limb off from the tree, the branch is going to get dry because there is no water, there is no nourishment. But we stay on the tree, we stay together, then the branch is going to flourish, the leaves are going to keep green, the fruits and flowers would be there, and life would go on. So in Krishna consciousness, this is our life, to enjoy with Krishna, to enjoy in service, in reverence, in partaking of devotional activities. And our life can be very happy. So these are some points I had on these verses. So if anyone has any comments or anything to add or questions, maybe we can take them. Trivikram Prabhu?
Earlier you were talking about signs and symptoms like of Kamsa's death, for example. I think there are signs and symptoms in all of our lives, but sometimes we're not so much aware and so much observant. See, like in the earlier ages and time, people could read these signs and they would know, but for us, it would be just in front of us, but we don't have a clue what's going on. You know, yeah. It's just because, you know, we're so much caught up with scientific views and so forth. See, so we don't see. But you know, if you know to read them, they're just in front there also. See,
the whole Vedic culture is designed in that way to give us everything that is needed for us to carry on our lives. And it's based on us, the onus is on us to take advantage of it. I know my dad was like that. I remember one morning he woke up, I was little, I was like 6 years old. He woke up and a rat had bitten his somewhere on his shoulder or something when he was asleep. And then he woke all of us up and he said, this is very, very bad symptom that actually one of my child would pass away soon, that this is very bad. And 2 weeks after, my brother passed away, one of my brothers. So, you know, he was able to, you know, see that and look. And for us, you know, we live in Guyana, there are no like seal rooms or stuff. You know, rats would run around or whatever, it's no big deal. But for him, he took it very seriously because, you know, he, some or the other, he understood. So he was a person of that nature. Everything he does literally is a worship. The way he holds his plate of food, the way he would eat, he never touched his meals with his left hand. He never put his left foot out forward, you know, first when he's leaving the home. He had a whole process his whole life. A certain time he wake up, certain time he does, certain time, like clockwork his whole life, you know. So the Vedic system is like that. It kind of gives us some opportunity to understand these things and to take advantage of them. Of course, in Krishna consciousness, we don't have to get into all these details. Like one time when Srila Prabhupada went to India, it was during Kartik time, Chaturmasya, and he said, I want spinach to eat. And then the servant said, oh, Srila Prabhupada, this is fasting from spinach this month. And he said, oh, you follow all of that too? Something to that effect. He said, oh, you take, yeah. So Krishna consciousness is like following Vedic culture, but in the context of Krishna consciousness, of what is, you know, what is more important. So, like, for example, the one in Vedic culture, the sannyasi isn't allowed to cross the water, the ocean, the seas. in Krishna consciousness. Basically, that's all that the sannyasis does, crossing the ocean all the time. You know? So in the context of Krishna consciousness, they're preaching, they're using that as a service to Krishna. So with all these different symptoms, like here in the Bhagavatam, there are so many different, what we would term as ritualistic symptoms are there. It's good for us to accept it, but don't use that as the all-in-all of our life. Chanting of Hare Krishna is most important. So even if we don't get the symptoms or understand the symptoms, the bottom line is that we are prepared, or at least we should be. So, right. Thank you so much for that comment. Anyone else? Oh, Mother Radhika.
Prabhu, I just am inspired by your family and how dedicated you are to serving Lord Jagannath. I was just
wondering.
Sorry?
You may think so.
Well, from the outside, there's obviously some internal relationship there also. So I was wondering if you'd be kind enough to share a little bit of just your inspiration, your family's inspiration for serving so nicely and so continuously.
I don't know where to start. Anyway, but it's all of cooperation, basically, from my wife. That's like, I think I owe everything to her, because she, you know, she was very dedicated to. And not only the good part about it, and with my children, is that it's not what we discussed to do. I would decide that, I'm going to do this service, and they would all say, well, if it's of interest to you, we are there with you. So from day one, that was how we actually got started. And I think I mentioned in Daytona Beach the other day that we started this service like 30 years ago in Guyana. My wife was like about 11 then or something, and she was serving. And that's way before we got married. So she was serving, I was serving. We did the first Ratha Yatra. And some or the other, we just determined to do some service. Actually, when I first came to the movement, one thing that I liked to do was to read Srila Prabhupada's pastimes and the Lilamrita. And one thing that actually struck me is when Srila Prabhupada says, he gave one instruction towards the end of his life. Wasn't any particular instruction, it was just very wide open to everyone who was present. He said just three words. He said, just be responsible. And when I read that, I kind of tried to figure, what does that mean, just be responsible? And then I start discussing with other devotees what that could possibly mean. And one of the persons was actually Shesha Prabhu back in, I don't know, it was like early 90s. He was substituting GBC for Guyana, and he went there. And then I kind of get this understanding that, you know, we should, if every one of us take up some little responsibility, then, as Srila Prabhupada said, he said, everyone take up some responsibility, this movement can carry on nicely. So basically, that's what we are trying to do, take some little responsibility. And if, you know, my family takes some responsibility, somebody else takes some, then the whole movement, it can go on so nicely. Actually, it was, not sure if it was Srila Prabhupada quoting his Guru Maharaj. But anyway, the saying is that when one becomes initiated into this movement, and by initiation we don't mean that one physically gets initiation. Initiation means the beginning, when you want contacts. So when one, as soon as one contacts this movement, the very first day, then there are three things, three obligations that develops. One is that one should be responsible for his own life, like to chant his rungs, follow the regulated principles to make his life purified and qualified. Second, one develops the obligation to take care of the ones who are surrounding him, his wife, family, or whoever subjects he may have, to make sure that they engage in Krishna's service also. And thirdly, to take some responsibility within Lord Chaitanya's movement. So these three obligations automatically develop when one contacts Krishna consciousness. It's something is actually almost like contagious. That anyone who contacts Lord Chaitanya's movement, this responsibility automatically comes with it. It's part of the package. So it's part of what we are doing, and we're hoping that by doing that, others can also be inspired to do something in other ways. And we're seeing so many devotees, they're doing so much wonderful services throughout our movement. Not all of them might be as gross and bold as what we are doing, because people see us out there. So, but there are a lot of devotees who are behind the scenes taking so much responsibilities. And sometimes we don't always see it. But the actual festival is only like the peak of the iceberg. Normally, the peak of the iceberg is just like 1/10 of the iceberg you can see above. Everything else is under, behind, that you don't see. So to carry on our whole society, there's so much things that needs to be done. Somebody has to take care of the sound system, somebody has to take care of the deities, the screens, the temple room floor. There's so much stuff. So if everyone dedicates to take some responsibility within our society, then our society can flourish. A lot of preaching can go on. There's so many things. Like Saturday, I was speaking with Mother Ragatmika. She was there serving prasadam. So I was asking her, how was prasadam serving? She said, well, you know, I wasn't there much, but basically the nick of her service is to go out reaching people, distributing books, talking to people, you know, introducing Krishna consciousness. So on all our festivals, literally that's what she's doing. She's taking on that service to go out and, you know, try to contact people and bring them into the tents, bring them into the association of devotees. So she's taking that responsibility, and there are other devotees who take different other responsibilities. Similarly, in so much of our society, all around, there's some devotees preaching on the internet. Kanamara Mohan Prabhu and Pushkar Prabhu, they give classes so often in over the internet, over Skype in Hawaii. They're here and they just do that, you know. So they're preaching across the whole continental U.S. But not a lot of people know about that, because, you know, it's not big out there. So don't think that we alone are doing service. Everyone is doing. So thank you so much. Anything else? Anyway, so we can stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.